He needed to be vulnerable with God before he could be with me.
Mm.
Yeah, and it was the greatest gift that God's ever given me in our marriage is that Art could fall in love with him more than me.
Welcome to the Created and Called podcast with this week's guests, Art and Maggie Klatt.
Welcome back to the Created and Called podcast. This is Mother Gabriella here today with Brian.
Hey, Mother. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Awesome. And Father Michael joining us today.
Good, Mother. How are you?
Doing well. Glad to be here with you guys. Feels a little lonely without my other lady friends, but it's okay. I think we'll manage.
You're gonna manage? Okay.
So I was thinking today as I'm reading a very, very long book. who's my favorite author? So I was wondering if you could answer that question, Father Michael. Who's your favorite spiritual author?
Holy cow, you're gonna go to me first.
So one of the I'm gonna go with two. All right. So
okay. Yeah. Define your own rules.
Well, I mean, it's like I have reasons for having several. I have a lot actually, but like right now, one of my favorite authors is John Eldridge, who is an evangelical Christian. He does talks and all that, but he's written a number of books that have specifically appealed to the masculine heart. I just think he's extremely insightful. So actually, I'm thinking of a third, actually, too. So I'm just going to name three and go. Okay. I'm just going to keep stretching.
Three for the price of one.
Yeah, that's right.
Billy Mays over here.
Going out of business.
Green
sale over here.
Catholic.
So Eldridge is one of my favorites. So some of the books that he's written are like Wild at Heart, Fathered by God, Beautiful Outlaw, I think is one. I haven't read that one yet. Sacred Romance is one on prayer. I actually have that one on my bookshelf. But there's like 70 books on my bookshelf that are lined up to be read. He's one. I love John Paul II. Mm-hmm. Like I love some of the things that he's read written. I'm sorry. I love to have a chance to read him. So there's encyclical pieces. There's like the reflection on givenness. Like there's other pieces that are shorter. But his works on vocation that he's written, like throughout like Love and Responsibility, just beautiful stuff. So those are two of my favorite. I'll say the third.
Who's the third?
I really grew up in this when I was going through the seminary. I kind of grew up reading Rollheiser as one of my first one of the first authors that I read.
Yeah, he's great.
And he was very insightful. I think those three guys are all very different. And they're all guys. That's okay. But you know, go figure, it's me. So yeah. So those, I would put those three guys out there. Of course, there's 100 more that I like, but there we go. Brian, I'm going to put you on the spot next.
Hey-o.
We won't make ladies go first.
Right. Sorry. Now I'm between probably Thomas Merton and Edith Stein.
Big guns.
There's the two.
I like Merton now.
Like, I'll read him a ton for a short while, and then I won't touch him for a while. And then I'll go back and like dive in. I'm like, oh, thank God. It's just, he spells so many things out.
What's your favorite of him?
Ooh, I don't know. Because they're all like attached to different parts of my life. So like I remember like I was staying in this tree house out in the woods in Kentucky for a few days, like probably 4 or 5 years ago now. And I was reading like Zen and the Birds by him and then a couple other books. Right now I'm reading like The Ascent to Mount Carmel. Mm. And what's the other one? New Seeds of Contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
Like Edith Stein, I have a bunch of stuff by, but I've been working through The Science of the Cross. And that's been
science.
Amazing.
Okay. Yeah.
Like it's been really, 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 really good. It's basically just a ton of other mystics that are all talking about like John of the Cross slash like Gregory of Nyssa and just like spelling them out.
Yeah. That's
and
awesome.
It's incredible.
That sounds fantastic.
That's awesome. It is. Like, yeah. I mean, Merton just has a way though of, even just like a Seven Story Mountain, just like the first paragraph of the book, it's like he was younger. So he doesn't like refute it later on, but he's always like, look, you know, I was young, I was kind of romantic and you always wanted to be a writer, but just like the first paragraph of that book is astounding. And like, he'll like spell out human nature while like simultaneously telling you like where he was born and what was going on in the world. And you're just like, crap, that was amazing. That's yeah, like awesome. Those two, especially right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I guess to follow up Father Michael's, you know, if he gets three, I guess I can have three too.
It's only fair.
I think it's only fair, but
it's all about what's fair.
The first couple, there were three that came to mind. First would be Catherine Doherty. She awesome books on she. It's beautiful because she kind of brings together East and West for me. Mm-hmm. Growing up Roman Catholic, but then now I'm in a Byzantine monastery, and so she helps me to kind of understand a lot of our spirituality and be able to explain it. And she just has a plethora of of different books that just kind of explain different terms, and also I don't know, she just spoke to me very early on in my monastic life in a very beautiful way.
That's cool.
And then also I feel like I wouldn't be the person I am today without Father Jacques Philippe.
That's a good one.
And Philippe in his book, especially Interior Freedom, which is the first one I read, and then Searching for and Maintaining Peace, those two books like just totally slayed me. So but then coming in, I would say, so spiritual books, we in the monastery definitely count novels as spiritual. My favorite Catholic novelist is Michael D. O'Brien, for sure. Which if you're looking for large volumes that are very long, but will basically like rip your heart out, that's Michael D. O'Brien. I'm just finishing the last book of the Children of the Last Days series, which is A Cry of Stone. And it's just like, I mean, it's like 800 pages, but it's really beautiful. And it's just kind of ripping my heart out. But it's amazing because he can literally like, he writes like how God speaks to one of the characters. And you're like, wow, how do you know how God speaks to me? Like, so it's really beautiful. But so if you haven't checked him out, you absolutely should. Father Michael.
Not me though, apparently.
No. Well, I assumed, have you not read him either?
No.
Okay. Well, we've got some problems here and we'll talk about that later.
We have a lot more problems.
Well, let's go ahead and throw it over to our wonderful guest this evening. We have with us two of my very favorite people in the whole world. Married couple, straight out of Akron, Ohio. My friends Maggie and Art Klatt. Welcome.
Thank you, Mother.
Thank you, Mother. Happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. We're so happy you could be here. I'm just so personally grateful you can be here. Maggie and Art are just, like I said, two of my favorite people in the whole world, but also two of the most beautiful married people I'm blessed to know. I've known Maggie since, a very long time, but we started being friends in like fifth grade and grew up five houses apart. And it's been just a beautiful journey that the Lord has blessed us with over the last a lot of years. And then being blessed to meet Art when they started dating. And now they've been married for 12 and a half years, which is just crazy. Married right after we got out of college. And now Maggie stays at home with their five beautiful children, and Art works for PNC Bank in commercial banking,
that's right,
providing for their family. And so we're so blessed for you guys to be here tonight and to hear some of your story that I've been blessed to just be a part of and so grateful for. So if you want to just get started with what are some kind of like how you grew up, what are some of your dating, engagement, marriage, kind of what that looked like, if you could walk us through that, that would be awesome.
Yeah, we'd be happy to. We're blessed to be here. Like you said, Mother, we've known you for many years, and I guess my story starts. I grew up in Chicago, actually, and two brothers, older brother, younger brother. So I'm the middle, and my parents. We raised in the house that we lived in Villa Park, Illinois, and My parents were, my dad was raised Catholic. My mom was raised Lutheran. When they got married, my mom converted. But they weren't really into their faith early on in their marriage, but then, got really into it later on. And, I was blessed to kind of walk through my dad's conversion along with him. And I say conversion, his growth in faith. And so I started going on men's conferences with my dad at like a really young age. I want to say I was probably like 8 or 9, 9 or 10. And, I loved going to these conferences with him. And
At one of the booths, at one of them, he had they had a Legionnaires of Christ table. And so I got to chat with these priests a little bit, and I started going on these retreats with the Legionnaires, and just had a really deep walk with Christ, I would say, early on. I loved altar serving. I would go to daily mass with my dad and serve, because a lot of times the altar servers wouldn't show up. And so I just loved doing that. And it was beautiful going through that experience. And if I take a step back even further, I think my first like real encounter with Christ was watching the Jesus of Nazareth movies. Like they were on VHS back in the day, and
dating ourselves there.
my dad wanted to watch them as a family. And so we started watching them and didn't really finish them as a family, but I just wanted to keep watching them. And so I kind of finished them on my own. And it was my first kind of realization of who God is and what he means to me and how I'm his son and all that stuff. And anyhow, was really discerning the priesthood actually from an early age. Whenever you're an altar server, you know, you always have the old ladies come up to you and say, you should be a priest someday. And, I definitely had that. And, my parents really fostered my vocation through sending me to these retreats with the Legionnaires. And actually, when I was going from middle school into high school, I went on a retreat at their main high school in Edgerton, New Hampshire. Or no, not Edgerton, New Hampshire. It's in New Hampshire. But
Cheshire, isn't it? Cheshire?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's it. Edgerton, Wisconsin is where I would go on the retreats. That's gotcha. Why I had Edgerton in my head. But yeah, and had a great time, but just really felt like I wasn't ready to make that leap yet by going into high school there. And so went through high school, and I think that's when I really started to realize how much I like girls. and so I was still discerning the priesthood really heavily, but didn't really ever have any dating relationships in high school. I would say it wasn't through necessarily a lack of effort on my part. I asked many a girl out. But it wasn't in the cards for me at that time in my life. And I definitely think God's hand was there in that. Mm-hmm. But I was definitely, though, discerning kind of through that whole period of time. I always considered any girl that I was dating as like a serious type of relationship that I would see marrying this girl someday. And maybe that was a little intimidating to to some of the girls, but anyhow, that's what kind of led me to college. And I'll let Maggie kind of tell her story up until then too.
Yeah. So just like Art, I was raised in a Catholic family, one of five kids actually. And I fall second in the order. And like Mother said, we grew up on the same street, and my house was kind of the house that everybody came to. My mom has had many hats, but she was a youth minister. She actually became a pastoral minister at some point. She had numerous other jobs working in my dad's family business and a printing business. But our house was kind of like a mecca, I guess, for, you know, sitting around the table.
So many conversations around that table.
Just my
and
faith
that
was
now in our house.
It actually is. We refinished it. So, just growing up in a home where faith was really easily talked about. I think mostly because we went through a lot as a young family. My dad's a recovering alcoholic, of I think over 25 years now, and between AA and Al-Anon, and then the marriage and counter movement. Just from a young age, I learned what like those things could either make or break a family. And so mm-hmm. faith was really just something that my family had to cling to through that. So I just remember growing up going to daily mass a lot just to get us through those harder times. And then going into high school, I was very involved in the youth group. And it was then that I started going to the youth conferences at Franciscan. And that really ignited my faith in a way that it really hadn't even been before. It was like Art was saying, an encounter mm-hmm. with God, where I knew that he was really real and he loved me. And I even thought about, like, I could never come here for college. Like, it would just never happen because my family didn't have the money at that point for sure. But I just kind of, I remember asking God, like, maybe you could make this happen. And and so I think it was like freshman or sophomore year of high school, my dad ended up having, he had been sober for many years at this point, but had gone through kind of like a nervous breakdown and was diagnosed with bipolar. And so the business that we had as a family, it didn't survive through that. But because of that, I applied for financial aid in my senior year of high school. And I went to Franciscan for like $1,000 the first year. And so, you know, just looking back, I can see God's hand in everything.
Yeah. And I had heard about Franciscan from going on the summer conferences. I did that for, gosh, like 6 summers before college. And the last two were, we actually went to the campus because the other ones were just hosted regionally out in the Illinois area. But I had heard about this pre-theologate program that they had at Franciscan where you could finish your minor seminary in the 4 years of going to school there, but it was on a co-ed campus. So if that wasn't necessarily your call, you know, God would send you somebody.
A twofer.
Yeah, that's right. And so
always the businessman.
And so lo and behold, we ended up meeting Maggie like 3 weeks into school. And
I was not there for my MRS degree, like many ladies go. The ratio, I think, is probably still 3-1.
Yeah.
Females like to males.
It's good for the guys, right? Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
No doubt. And I think there's even some guys who discern out of the pre-theology program when they're there.
Oh, there are.
But I entered as a normal student because I had heard like, hey, you know, you can't play sports and things and if you're in the pre-theology program, which didn't end up being true. But I ended up meeting Maggie a few weeks into school and we started dating within the first, like by October of our first semester.
I had to give him my number like 3 times before he saved it.
That's true. And I actually did lose her number.
Lost her number?
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things. I thought it saved my phone. You remember the old flip phones everybody used to have? Well, I had one of those and I thought it saved my phone. It didn't.
He used that excuse twice.
Yeah. Well, but this
third time's the charm.
This is the best story though. So we ended up, it was parents' weekend and we had like seen each other outside the cafeteria one day. And she was like, hey, you should hang out with us this weekend. And I was like, oh, I don't have your number. I lost your number. And I was like, let me give you mine. And so like that next day, she actually called me, which was for me like a monumental moment. And I think she kind of had me at that moment when she called me. But we ended up spending like 4 or 5 hours outside of your dorm, just chatting about life and all of that. And I was like hooked, just in that moment. And it was one of those God things where he really brought us together. And, this was like before we started dating and, like when I asked her out, like story is actually pretty good because I played on the rugby team at Franciscan and because nobody has a car, I had to ask one of my fellow rugby buddies to see if I could borrow his car. And he's like, oh, instead of borrowing my car, why don't we just go on a double date? And I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. So he got a girl to go. And obviously, Maggie and I went together and we went out to this lovely restaurant in Steubenville, Ohio.
Lenora's.
Super, super classy. They had a live singer there.
Are there classy restaurants in Steubenville, Ohio? That's awesome.
Well, if you picture a classy restaurant in Steubenville, Ohio, just this would be in the dictionary. But anyhow, so we had a nice dinner and we ended up going back and we were all going to hang out in one of the common rooms, in one of the dorms, because, you know, they have a lot of really good rules at the school and, you can only really hang out in these common rooms. And anyhow, so we were going to do that. And the girl that was went with the other guy that we went with made a classic Steubenville excuse or Franciscan excuse of like, oh, I can't because I've got a rosary commitment with my household. And I think she just didn't really want to be on the date anymore.
I've got a rosary commitment.
Yeah, right. But anyhow, Maggie and I went and the guy actually went with us into this common room. So it was the three of us. And he didn't really get the hint for a while. So, I mean, we were there for like over an hour with him there. And, you know, finally he left at one point.
I'm going to kill you.
Dude, don't you have a rosary commitment too?
But I did like formally ask her out. It was pretty cheesy. And we started dating at that point. And honestly, Franciscan, and I'm sure Maggie would agree, was just like a really awesome formative time for us. We made incredible relationships, and we traveled abroad together. Mm-hmm. We went to Austria for a semester together.
We learned a lot about each other in Austria.
Yeah,
the good and the bad. Traveling and sleep deprivation were, it was like really good training ground for marriage and family life.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think Austria was where I really understood that Maggie was the one for me and that God wasn't calling me to the priesthood, because I still was discerning at that time. And I was upfront with Maggie that, hey, I still feel like God might be calling me to this when we started dating. But
it was funny too, how God used this particular time. I was one of the resident assistants. So I had gone over there, I think it was like 2 weeks early. And I don't even remember. I think I had an old email that he was emailing, and I wasn't checking this email. He kept, you know, are you there? Are you safe? How's it going? And I wasn't responding. Mm-hmm. And at that time, he was actually at a monastery in Italy, spending about a week before the semester started with some friends.
Some Benedictine monks.
Right. And I think at that point, he kind of...
I was really missing Maggie for that like whole period I was there. And I loved being there. It was just, it was my kind of scene. I loved it. But this whole time I felt a longing in my heart for Maggie and for relationship with her. And as much as I was being filled up by God and during that time, it was kind of what sealed the deal for me of like, yeah, this is what God's calling me to. And that was kind of the moment, the experience, you can even say that really solidified, you know, what I was called to. Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of always a struggle for me. I was okay with, not okay, I was at peace with him still like being open to what God wanted. I mean, I wanted him to do whatever God wanted, but it was always kind of a struggle because I had discerned religious life when I was in high school, and I just didn't ever feel the call. Mm-hmm. And so I was pretty sure I was supposed to be married. And then after we had dated for over a year, I was pretty sure it was going to be to Art, but he wasn't there yet. So it was, I mean, I was still guarding my heart in a way, but it was always just every time it came up, it was kind of painful because, you know, every time that he said, well, I might still be called to the priesthood, it was like, okay, well, we're dating. So, but yeah, so this time apart, it wasn't as hard on me because I'm just kind of like, you know, I'm ready to say yes whenever you're going to ask me. I mean, we were only sophomores in college at this point, but yeah, it was beautiful how God was working and I wasn't even a part of it.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It really was. And so we dated the rest of the way through college and ended up getting engaged the summer between our junior and senior year, and then got married right out of school. So that was... It was beautiful. It was beautiful. We really enjoyed it. And so, yeah, we got married, and I think marriage for us was beautiful, but we had this awesome community at Franciscan, and we really, really missed that community as much as we loved being together and like sleeping in the same like house and room and bed together type of thing. It was, we like really missed community probably within the first mm-hmm. few months of being married. And so we started a Bible study in Akron because there wasn't really much for 22-year-olds to do unless you wanted to go to the like old persons group that met for whatever, right? And so we got together with some young people at other parishes, and just we did this Bible study group then for about 7 years or so.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I forgot about the Bible study.
Yeah.
Shout out to the 20-somethings.
That's right.
We wouldn't fit anymore.
And it was beautiful. We really enjoyed that. And Father Blind became the pastor at our parish early on in our marriage. And he's the one who married us. And he's just been a huge part of our, he was part of our marriage prep. And and obviously married us then. And he's just been a wonderful, wonderful priest, wonderful father in our mm-hmm. life, in our lives. And, yeah, so from there, he helped us start this connections group at our parish. And that was another community type building thing where mm-hmm. we got with other couples and we started just kind of dating them in a sense and going out with them. And then we started doing some more, we started doing a retreat once a year mm-hmm. and all those, different types of things. But for me, I think early on in our marriage as well, I kind of realized how much more my relationship with Christ needed to grow. You know, you get into the working world and, there's so much different type of pressure that's put on you that you're not necessarily used to. And then your life just gets really busy as the kids start coming. And I think Maggie actually reached out to Father Blind and suggested that I start going to spiritual direction with him. And
it was kind of like a pivotal time. I think it was just after our second was born. And, you know, there's a lot of sleep deprivation. You don't have any free time anymore. you're just kind of at each other. And I mean, we were still going to church. We were involved in the youth group, helping out with the youth group at that point. Still like faith was a priority for us, but we just needed a deepening. And
we were missing like the vulnerability, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
between the two of us.
We were really missing like a deep prayer life between us. An avenue that we could share our hearts with one another, mm-hmm. I guess is the way I'd put it. And spiritual direction for me helped bring that out of myself because mm-hmm. I was very much, and this is kind of one of the wounds I carried from my childhood into my marriage was just like that whole identity of like, I've got everything under control. Like you don't have to worry about me. I'm good. Like I've got a great relationship with God and you do realize like, yeah, but that has to mature and grow. And if you don't give it time and attention, it doesn't tend to do that, right? It just becomes this part of you that doesn't grow where other things are growing and sometimes then can take over your identity. And so Father Blind in spiritual direction really brought that out in me and really helped me to see some of the wounds that I inherited in my younger years and kind of brought into my marriage and work life. And that for me just opened up a whole new, avenue within myself. And I think then I started sharing a lot more with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think at that particular time I was really desiring Art to lead our family in a way. I think many women have like a preconceived notion of how their husband is going to do that. And most often it doesn't because it's kind of unrealistic. And so I needed to just like release that to God firstly. And then I did text Father Blind or emailed him and said, like, I need you to help me by having spiritual direction with my husband.
I thought that very peculiar. Like it was Art that definitely needed the direction and not you, Maggie.
She knows her husband.
yeah. But it was a totally graced moment because he needed to be vulnerable with God before he could be with me.
Mm.
Yeah, and it was the greatest gift that God's ever given me in our marriage is that Art could fall in love with him more than me. And that was just the beginning of it.
Yeah. And I think what really like opened the floodgates for us was this really awesome book that we, I uncovered and we actually read together then. It's called 40 Weeks. I think it's an Ignatian path to freedom.
Yeah. It's by, I think it's Dr. Bob Schutz and, is it for priests?
No, this is actually a different one. I forget the author's name. But it is a priest that wrote it, but it's beautiful. It's 40 weeks. So you do this book for 40 weeks. It's 9 months long. Yeah. And, there's essentially one reflection that you focus on for the entire week. And like I said, Maggie and I did this together. And
he came to me actually, I think this was in 2017. So I had, well, we had four children.
Yeah.
Probably under the age of like 9. And he said, I really want to do this, you know, prayer journey with you. And I'm looking through it. I'm seeing it's 40 weeks. This is longer than pregnancy. And you want me to commit to, and he's like, oh, it's 15 minutes a day. I know that we can do it. And at first I had a lot of resistance to it because I really didn't want him like to tell me how to pray. I just wanted us to like pray together. And I don't know. But God was giving me this awesome gift in that he was leading our family. He was leading our you know, marriage in this way. And all I had to do was say yes to, you know, this 15 minutes.
Mm. Yeah. And so we went through this and it was, you know, I've fallen in love with Ignatian spirituality from really this book, because it was so much diving into your past, like mm-hmm. discovering your wounds, handing them over to Christ. And the fact that we were doing this together just mm-hmm. opened up this dialogue between us that we were both really encountering ourselves in a new way and then sharing that with one another. And it was, and many things that were kind of like deep past wounds and mm-hmm. sins that we've endured, just sharing those with one another was just a really beautiful thing for our marriage. And it built this incredible habit of prayer within us individually and then as a couple. And I would highly recommend that for any couple, you know, a book, this book in particular, but reading a book together, just mm-hmm. opens up a lot of really good conversation, mm-hmm. really good conversation.
That's beautiful. How would you say like since that time that your prayer life has, how's that changed and cemented things, or how has that kind of opened things up since you kind of did that book over the last several years? How has that kind of maybe changed the direction of how things were before to now?
I think it's just the vulnerability piece. Like before I was okay with letting him know what was going on in my heart, but I don't think that he was. I think he felt like he had to have it all put together before he could share anything with me on like a deeper level. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that was like a game changer to know, you know, we didn't need to get away on a retreat to know like how each other really mm-hmm. were doing. We could just share each day.
And for me, I think it was a temptation from the enemy of really like as a man, you're supposed to kind of have it all together and you don't want to put a burden on your spouse or on your family. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to be this provider and just get things done. But you know, that's an incredible weight. And especially when you don't necessarily have a great understanding of who the Father is for you and you're mm-hmm. kind of journeying through that understanding and process. Yeah. It was really hard for me to like have cracks within myself that I couldn't measure up to the expectations that were being placed upon me. And so when I was finally able to kind of let that go and allow Maggie to enter into my struggle, and my fears and all of that, it was a breakthrough for our marriage. And I think the book itself allowed us to have that consistency then too, because mm-hmm. we were praying every day. Mm-hmm. That we started that habit, and it took 40 weeks, but we started we built that habit into our life, and it has made absolutely all the difference. Mm-hmm. I have never had a consistent like daily prayer life until that whole that book took us through it, and we developed that habit, and it was really awesome.
There's a lot of good things to attach on there. And I think just to expand for a moment, you know, one of the primary sins of masculinity is self-reliance. Mm. Now, it's not as if femininity doesn't commit self-reliance. We all as humans can commit self-reliance. We're all prone to it, and one is not more prone to the other. But you're right. I think because of cultural influence, men are very called to live a self-mastery. Well, self-mastery is a good theological term, but to live a self providing, self-reliant way of life.
Yeah.
I need very little and I can keep going for hours. And you said it well, but this produces a very big weight. And I would just even add to that, and maybe even to ask you if this is correct, it would produce a very big weight only for you.
Mm.
But I wonder if that weight is born with the partnership of somebody else. Does that weight look differently?
Yeah.
And, you know, for as a priest, like, you know, there's an intimacy that we're supposed to have with the Blessed Mother and with the rest of the church. As a married man, the intimacy that you have with your wife that you cling to becomes now capable of bearing weight that you didn't think was possible before.
Yeah, Father, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's beautifully put. When you get married, there's something different that's made on the altar there when you're exchanging your vows, right? Like two became one, right? Like we're now a different identity in a sense. Like there's a real spiritual change that's occurred. And I guess entering into that sacramental grace is what that moment was for me. You know, I was able to realize that, that this is a temptation from the enemy to just carry it all on myself. And that's where he wants me. He wants me to stay, within myself, solitude, you know, like don't let anybody else know how hard it is. Because then, you know, then you're not being a man, then you're not living up to the call you're supposed to have. And man, he just spews a ton of stuff at you all the time.
Yeah.
But when you go to spiritual direction, when you're able to talk about it with your spouse, when you bring it out to the light, right? Like that's where transformation happens. That's where, God is really able to speak to you in a way that sometimes you need someone else to be able to pull that out of you so that he can then, you know, speak. And yeah, it's been a beautiful journey. Mm-hmm. It's been a beautiful journey.
And I would say to like any of the times that either of us has been struggling, you know, we usually know, even if the other person doesn't verbalize it, because we are one. Mm-hmm. And that's been a gift to be more vulnerable.
But it takes work to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's intentionality that we prioritized within our marriage to make sure that we maintain that closeness, that intimacy that allows us to know when one another is not all there, and when someone else can maybe pull some of the weight for the other because they're struggling in whatever way. And it's that beautiful journey of marriage that God knew we needed a partner in life, right? And marriage is just wonderful. And so Maggie and I mean, we help out with marriage retreats, group at our parish where, you know, a married couple meets with an engaged couple that's going to be married at the parish. And it's just a beautiful, we just feel a real call to journey with others in their path towards marriage and their path in marriage. And it's a beautiful gift. It's a beautiful gift.
With all your work, so I know you also do like pre-Cana weekends and just all the different kind of ministries that you were just kind of describing. What's some of the advice that you offer to people who you're meeting with, or just like what are like, I don't know, things that you would offer to them to look out for, or like struggles that you've had that you've overcome? I mean, you said some of those, but like, what is there like a piece of advice that you're like, I want to make sure that I pass this on to people who are dating or engaged as they're preparing for and discerning marriage?
You want to go first, babe?
You go first. I want to see what you have to say. You know,
one of the things I know we always talk about in, we do the communication talk on our pre-Cana day retreat with these couples. And one of the things we always talk about is I think marriage is about little moments. Marriage is about the little moments where you decide to turn toward one another or turn away from one another. Mm. And I think those little moments are what create the type of marriage that you're going to have. And I mean, it's similar to any vocation, right? You can take shortcuts, you can, you can slack off, you can do different things. And then that causes other things to occur. I think so many times I can recall just little moments on a daily basis where I can choose to help Maggie with the dishes, or I can, you know, selfishly just like, I put in a hard day's work. I just need to go sit on the couch and just zone out for a little while. And it's calling upon that grace to turn toward her in those moments. Because I think, you know, we journey, like I said, with so many other couples, and you can just see little decisions that people make that cause their marriages to maybe not be as deep and intimate as they could be.
I would say one thing too, growing up, my mom always taught us to take a retreat every day, every month, and every year. You can probably recite that, Mother.
I was like, every day, every week, every month, every year. Thanks, Ellen.
But I think even too, like, that applies to your vocation, because it's really easy to let the big thing go when there's so many other little things. So like every day it might be that when the kids are in bed, you know, taking time on the couch just to talk to each other instead of, you know, staring at the TV. Or, you know, we've made it a point, I think, since our first or second year of marriage, to take a retreat day or a weekend, every year. And then we try to always do, like you talked about, the different ministries that we do, but, those are almost like our monthly retreats too, because every time that we go to do something, I mean, even like saying yes to doing this podcast, it forces us to take a look at our marriage and, and see like, oh, how are we really doing? I always joke that before we do the pre-Cana days, usually like 6 out of every, 12 months, and we have like the worst fights the day before. And it's very humbling because it's like, oh, right, not perfect still.
But it usually always gives us a great opportunity to talk about that fight the next
Absolutely.
Day. Because our talk is on communication. So.
That's the best.
Communicated well.
Yeah. It's so funny you say, I mean, that's how the Lord works, right?
Yeah.
Like, I was at a conference this past weekend, and the main speaker, or one of the main speakers, like, is talking about like her journey and healing and all these things. And she's like, literally the morning of the talk, she's like, and this morning, and I got my car stuck, and like all the, and the shame, and like all the thoughts, and like, and it was so relatable for me and so like important to see her in that, because then the shame and the pain of my own journey was just enlightened, and like, oh wait, like, and the whole point of that was like, you know, healing is a journey, not, you know, is a journey, not an event. And so, but like that you can witness to that in your experience. And also, Art, like what you were saying about that communication is like in the little things, I'm thinking about like community life and how so much can happen with a look and with a, you know, with those little moments throughout the day with our community, but also with our spouse, right? So like, I can choose to turn to food or out of anger to something else, or to, you know, I can choose to pacify any of those feelings inside of me, or I can choose to turn to the Lord throughout the day, and bring him those desires and those wants and needs, and like, or to my community members in a healthy way, right? Mm-hmm. To say like, you know, I'm not feeling so great. Like, I need to share this with someone, or, and to do both of those things in balance is so important and so needed. And it's a beautiful like moment to kind of see the need for that also in marriage. Like that there's also that balance of like, Maggie, you were talking about earlier about like Art falling in love with the Lord was the biggest gift that you'd receive. Like, because now he's fully in him, and now you can be vulnerable with one another. So I don't know. I was just kind of seeing that parallel really beautifully.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, leading from that, one of my questions was either as a couple or even just as individuals, how have you come to terms with times you knew that you needed to grow spiritually? You know, like those moments where you realize like my spiritual life isn't what I thought it was. And like, because like, I think a lot of people have those moments, but they can like brush over them kind of easily. Like, you know, whatever, I'll deal with it at some point. And then there's always that point where you're like, dude, I got to get my crap together.
Have a kid.
but not you.
Yeah, fine. I was about to say, if I did that, I think I'd be in a lot of trouble. A lot of people.
No, in such a beautiful way. I mean, for me, that was kind of the biggest realization of, you know, your imperfections is when, you know, you live your life when you're single and you have so much free time to yourself, and you realize how much time you just kind of waste.
Uh-huh.
And then you get married, and then some of that free time is asked of you, and you're accountable to someone on a daily basis. And so you give up that, and then you have one kid, and you're like, man, like this, I'm giving even more of myself. And then you have 2, 3, 4, 5 kids. And I think by the third kid, you're just like, okay, I just have no free time. Right? And so my life is now about others. And for me, that's having kids was the realization of your life is about the other, you know, and how little how much inwardly focused I was before that time. And I think it's one of the, you know, pervasive struggles of our culture is everything's about me. And it's so hard to get out of me because there's so many things to compare yourself to, right? There's so many ways you can amuse yourself. There's so many things that keep you from doing that deep interior work that God wants you to do. And it requires some silence, right? And we don't have a lot of silence in this world. You have to create the silence. And we don't have much silence in our home. And so we wake up early. That's when we pray.
We also have 20-foot ceilings that the shrieks in the morning are very painful to the ear. For me, it was in the beginning kind of like coming up empty a lot. You know, you're giving all the time, even before we had kids, just to your job or, you know, just the daily life. But it was noticing that empty feeling and then going to get filled up by the right things. But then over time, realizing, I mean, it's not rocket science, but you're like, just stay filled. And then and then you don't get empty ever. So for me, just even personally, not even as a couple, it's like finding out the things that fill me, and keeping up on that first so that I don't get to that empty feeling. And that's the same for us as a couple. That's why we take a marriage retreat every year. We're not the best at date nights, but, just finding intentional time together so that we're not empty.
Yeah, I think it's about creating those moments of vulnerability for us. Mm-hmm. And with our prayer, that's a lot of times where we were able to find that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a question that you had mentioned earlier, Maggie, that you wanted Art at various times in your marriage to take the lead. Mm-hmm. Two questions, and I also maybe have a question for you too, Art, to follow up. But what do you mean by wanting your husband to take the lead? And what do you believe other women want in their husbands? And then, Art, what do men want in their wives?
I think for me, taking the lead, I mean, it almost was like a place of woundedness because growing up, my dad struggled with alcoholism. I mean, he was sober by the time I was 7, so I don't really remember a lot, but just spiritually, he struggled throughout those early years of sobriety. So for me, it was like, I wanted Art to very simply like take the lead of like doing the nighttime prayers. It wasn't even like this like huge thing, but by the end of the day, at that point, like he was so stressed and tired from the workday that he wasn't even doing that. And so it was like as simple as that. But I think there was something deeper too, of just like, I don't know, just thinking of like St. Joseph and how he just cared so spiritually for the family. I don't know. I guess I can't really even articulate it too well.
And what do women desire from their husbands connected to that?
I think protection, like spiritual protection.
Okay. Yeah, one of the things that we always we read Ephesians 5 on during our communication talk every time, and you know it talks about women being subordinate to their husbands and husbands sacrificing themselves for their wives, and it, you know, it's not necessarily the most popular reading to read at a wedding because it's especially in our modern culture it's taken out of context so much, but we always talk about you want a man that you would want to subordinate yourself to, that you'd want to be in care of. And I think that's like a better almost translation of it is a man supposed to take care of his wife because he's supposed to be like Christ. So we all want to be taken care of by Christ because we see the kind of man that Christ is, right? And so Maggie wants me to be the kind of man that Christ is in the best way that I can be possible, right? And in that way, she'd love to be in my care, right? Because I'm going to put her before all of my own desires. I'm going to put our kids before all of my own desires. And therefore, you know, I think like when we talk about it, right? Like that's really what you want out of me, right? Is is that type of that type of man, that type of leadership in our marriage. And yeah, to answer your question, Father, about what a man wants in a woman. We always quote this other study in our communication talks about, you know, they surveyed, I don't know how many men, but they asked them a question of, would you rather be alone and unloved or disrespected and inadequate? So alone and unloved or disrespected and inadequate. That's a hard word to say. And the vast majority of men said they'd rather be alone and unloved. Because when you're disrespected and inadequate, I think that speaks to a deep wound in a man's heart. When you can't meet the challenges of, so for a woman, like, I want a woman that can embrace my weaknesses, right? Mm-hmm. And is okay with my imperfections, mm-hmm. and wants me to share those with her and doesn't want me to be this perfect man on the white horse, the pedestal that, you know, that I can't be. And so that in that way, I think that's where Maggie is just like the perfect spouse for me, you know, the perfect, bride that I have in this world. Yeah.
She receives you.
Yes.
And pulls more from you.
Yes. And accepts my my deficiencies and my inadequacies because she knows that I'm not God. Mm-hmm. I'm not Christ. Mm-hmm. She can't. And we talk about this again in our marriage talk. Like, you will never be completely happy with your spouse because your spouse is not him. But together you're supposed to lead one another to him, right? And we know we can't be him for one another. But in a mysterious, beautiful way, like, the two of us are supposed to be better together.
There's a really beautiful reflection by Father Julian Caron, who was head of one of the movements in the church. But he says that the woman awakens within the man an ache for that which she cannot satisfy. Mm. And it goes through how he describes how the man also does the same for the woman in some respects. So they have awakened within each other that which they can't satisfy. And so they will always be caught by a pretension of what they think can be fulfilled.
Hmm.
Or they will turn to God who can fulfill them. So it's interesting how we awaken each other. Even friends can awaken each other, but sure. Married couples must awaken each other. Right. And now in marriage, you have the choice to live in the pretension that, maybe one day Maggie will fulfill me, or maybe one day Art will fulfill mm-hmm. me, or you realize that God will be the one that fulfills you. And that's how you move towards one another, is through him in love and response of him.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
That is beautiful.
I totally agree with that. I mean, it's there's so much, inside of marriage that you just want more of, that you'll never be able to achieve.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just that spiritual hunger, that spiritual desire for heaven, for just that beatific vision that we'll hopefully all one day have. But just resting in that and just mm-hmm. sitting in that want, is healthy and it's beautiful mm-hmm. and it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, it's important to remember, like, there's a spiritual battle going on and the enemy is always trying to get you to be like, don't share that, mm-hmm. you know, that would be too much to share. Or, I mean, specifically for women, like, oh, you know, that's not a valid concern. Or for men, like, you know, you need to be strong. You can't be this weak. And so I think for us too, like, just reminding ourselves that God gave us to one another as a gift, and, you know, there's nothing that we can't share with one another.
Mm. That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing and for just inviting us into listen to your story and just being so open and vulnerable with that. We're Absolutely. Really grateful for your time.
Thank you guys for coming
up. It's good to be here.
Completely our pleasure. Yeah.
I'm so glad that everyone is able to just be with us this evening and listen to Maggie and Art. They are just two of my favorite people, as I said at the beginning, but now I hope they're, everyone was able to see some more of that goodness that just pervades their life and their hearts. And I'm just wondering what struck the two of you about our conversation tonight?
Honestly, throughout tonight, one thing I kept thinking about is the way they talked about marriage was how much it reminded me of my parents. And like, and that's like a very high compliment, just because they were just such good parents, and just the openness, especially like just talking about like giving up everything for the kids. Just like my father would like work all day, do this, do that. And like, he was always at like our band concerts, like thing after thing after thing. So like really just the way they talked tonight was just really encouraging and really reassuring, like not just for me in the church, but just, to hear couples just talk about like working through the journey, and not giving up in despair, but just always going back to God. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just thought that part was awesome.
Absolutely. How about you, Father Michael?
Okay. So my takeaway is I was struck by how similar their daily life is and my daily life is. Let me just go through a couple of different things. One, Art mentioned that by the time you hit child three, you're like, okay, I got no free time. Like I don't have any free time. I mean, I don't mean to say that like in a, it's not a negative thing. It's just, and granted there's time that I have, you know, but compared to what I had, I've hit that point where I've sensed, you know, there's this entrance into a path of life that just should not be turned away from the aspect that, you know, it's given to people around. I guess when Art mentioned that he knows he has no free time, he was talking about the pull of his vocation. I've experienced the pull of my vocation, you know, in similar stages, right? The other piece is this. If priests want to be self-reliant lone rangers, they're going to hurt a lot of people. Or at the very least, they're going to give a lot of people a really false sense of leadership and fatherhood. So, you know, in my life, it's lately in my life, we'll say lately in the last 3 to 4 to 5 years, you know, especially like this experience of community, which both of them also talked about, this experience of community, but this experience also, this need and calling of sharing my life. There's no concern that's quote unquote too small, which Maggie said. And there's no moment of vulnerability that's not unimportant, as Art said. So to have a spiritual director, to have like when I'm with God in prayer, sometimes I'm just like, okay, let me go through an emotions and thought list and let me just tell you the emotions and thoughts that I have. You know, like I feel weak right now, or I feel poor, you know, like I want to name all the things that I need to name, right? So there's reliance. And I guess the last is that like I could catch both in what Art and Maggie both said was this very full expression of the masculine and feminine seen by Christ in the church, you know, in Ephesians 5 is this very beautiful moment. Like, I am very glad. I very much want to serve the church as a priest that the church would want me to serve as. You know, I would very much want to be a man that doesn't, how do I say it? Like, I think as a married couple experiences, so the priest or the religious experience, this desire to serve in a way where the other is able to unfold easily, or in the words of John Paul, safely under their gaze. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I just was grateful to see yet again from another married couple, all of these connections. So
I think for me, besides being able to witness and walk with them through their journey, and see the complementarity of my own vocation, like you were saying, Father Michael, my own vocation within theirs and vice versa, that there's a great witness that we have for one another. In that, for me, the word that just kept coming back was prayer, and just their journey of prayer, like in walking, you know, with Maggie, especially since very young, but then even through their marriage till now, like to see how their prayer life has blossomed and how that has informed and drawn them first to God, but then through God to one another in their marriage, and how that has created this stable place from which they both love each other, but they love their children and they love the church. And everything they do is really centered in that prayer life and flows out of that prayer life. And it's just, it's such a witness to me, because that's why I needed a monastic vocation, because I didn't know how to pray in the world. And so my vocation was given to me so that I could pray and be one with him. And so the fact that they've been able to learn how to do that together in their marriage is just such a blessing. And such a witness to me of that beauty of vocation. So, oh, it's been so wonderful. I'm so glad to be able to share, like I said, these two wonderful people with you and with the two of you, Brian and Father Michael. We're so grateful for everyone who's tuned in. This has been the Created and Called podcast. And again, this is Mother Gabriella.